Boom. What is happening, beautiful people? Welcome to another episode of Real Drug Talk. On this show, we talk about all things alcohol and drugs, addiction, addiction recovery, and anything else interesting in the space. Hey, just quickly, if you hear some things going down in the background, don't worry. It's just my son. It's all happening at our house. He's right in the middle of terrible twos, so he tends to just start screaming. Don't call child services on me or anything like that. He's just having a tantrum. Now that that's out of the way, I apologize, everyone. We missed last week's show just because I had the most insane week. I was in Canberra for the first half and then had plenty of other things going on in the background. So sorry about that. And hopefully we can give you some updates about all the cool things that we have in the oven to do with Canberra and politics, and yeah, just trying to advocate for better drug and alcohol policy for people who consume services, because that's what I care about and that's what Real Drug Talk is all about as well. So sorry for missing the episode. What we're going to do this week, because it's been a mad week, just super busy, I haven't even had a chance to think, we've got a repost of one of the most popular episodes that we've ever put out. And that's with a guy that I'm mates with named Jacob Cook. And the show is all about how he got off methamphetamine. So that's been the most popular episode that we've ever put out to date. So we hope for people that haven't heard that, that they enjoy it. And for everyone that has, you know, have another listen, because I'm sure that there's some good stuff that you can pick up and take out of it as well. So we'll be back with the usual programming next week. I hope everybody's like staying safe and well. If you hear anything in this episode that makes you want to get some help, or just in general, you're thinking about getting some help, we actually run a program called Connection-Based Living, where we help people to break addictive patterns without having to go to rehab. So if that sounds of interest to you, please click on the links below and reach out and get in contact with us. And yeah, we'd love to have a chat and see how we can help in your journey and if we can't point in the right direction. So there's the first thing that you can do is always just reach out and have a chat and ask for help. It's the biggest step. So I hope everybody again is having a good week, staying safe. Still excited about everything that's happening this year. We'll catch you on the other side. Enjoy the show, everybody. Peace. How you going, mate? We got Jacob Cook on the show, also known as the Cookie Monster. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good, thanks, Jack. Thanks for having me this morning, man.
No worries. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And yeah, like, I think it'd be cool to have you on the podcast. I know that sounds a bit weird because we talk to each other normally and stuff as well, but you know, I've had the pleasure of seeing you kind of go from start to where you are now. Like, how long have you been doing the recovery thing for?
Yeah, it's been like 6.5 years now.
Wow, time flies. So yeah, I remember when you started, we got to know each other a little bit better when we played basketball together. In the No Hopers League, and Jacob was actually good. So
well, I just passed the ball to you, being 6'8", you know.
Yeah, and then I fucking airballed it all the time. So it's cool to have you on, because I always like to have people on that, I've seen them just change and do really well. You're one of those people. So just quickly, let's just start with like your story. Give us the 3-minute snapshot version of it. What brought you into wanting to change your life up?
I guess originally from South Gippsland, down in Langatha, and
even know that. My family's from Traralgon. I know that's not South Gippsland.
Traralgon. Yeah, that's down the way.
Yeah.
Down the way. Yeah. Oh, mate, so a lot closer than you think. Small world.
So you're a bogan. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Apologies, mate, to everyone down that way.
mate, come down to the gaff, mate. We'll show you around the commission areas and show you what it's like. Yeah, I mean, like, for me, like, I don't know. Like, I got into trade really young. Like, I wanted to leave school.
Yeah.
Super early. And, yeah, like, I just, you know, fell into, like, old habits. Not old habits, but, like, I fell into, like, some poor, you know, made some, like, poor decisions, you know, early on from being in the trade. And usually, you know, you get an apprenticeship underneath your belt, you get sent to trade school, and, you know, you're on your way and a couple of beers and stuff with the guys after work. And unfortunately for me, it didn't really stop there. You know, I never really got sent to trade school, you know, and I was carrying on as, like, a first-year apprentice. And, yeah, like, I was like, you know, like, well, I'm not really getting anything out of it. And, yeah, I just kind of just fluffed around a bit, I guess. And,
yeah,
just continued to, I don't know. I think that was like year 10 for me. Like I left school.
Yeah.
Grade. So yeah, and then I don't know. Like my I don't know. There's going to be like a 3 minute snapshot. But like my family kind of left South Gippsland at the time, and I was staying with my grandma, and you know, I was still working in trade as a bricky, and yeah, I was never home for my grandma either. Like, you know, like initially it was kind of, you know, be home by, you know, 8:30, and you know,
yeah,
you go to bed and wake up the next morning, and you know, you kind of want to prove your innocence early on, and think that you got it all managed, and try and hide, you know, a lot. And so, you know, like I'd kind of knock off early and go hang out with the guys, and yeah, just kind of get up to no good and just be back like later than expected, I guess.
Yeah,
and then
do you reckon, like, because it's interesting that tradie thing, you know, that's for a lot of people. I was the same as you, like sort of disenfranchised, I guess, with like the normal sort of educational system. It just didn't suit me as a person. But I wasn't like a tradie either. But do you reckon, I went into trades and stuff, do you reckon that the culture almost in like that tradie scene of like just work hard and drink heaps of beers every day kind of started it for you, or not really?
Yeah, good question. Like I wouldn't I don't know, man. Like I just felt different. Like I just felt really different. Like they just have like a couple of knockoffs and stuff, whereas like I just, you know, would wanna and I guess like they kind of didn't understand it, like as well, like they didn't understand like exactly where I was at with it, and that was all really like well masked, and like I'd probably have like a couple of knockoffs with them and then just like continue to write myself off throughout the night, and which they could probably do it like manageably. That wasn't the case for me. You know, like good lads, like, you know, like all kind of looked after each other and, you know, worked really well together and, you know, got a lot of stuff done. You know, got a lot of stuff done really, really quickly, and like tried to take me under their wing and stuff, and like very appreciative for it. But unfortunately I just didn't, you know, feel as if like I fitted in still. Like I just like was still void, which is kind of strange at the time. I don't think you really understand, you know, emotionally what's really going on. I don't know. I guess like my mom.
Sorry, what were you gonna say? Shit.
No, you're right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, I guess like my mom and dad like kind of moving away and me wanting to stay distant from those guys because we had some stuff going on in the family at the time. I didn't want to deal with it. You know.
Yeah.
Like as a young adolescent teenager, and yeah, I kind of wanted to run from it. I guess like that's what I was doing from an early age, suppressing with drugs and alcohol. I don't know. Started drinking, then just started smoking, you know, cannabis after that, and obviously like getting into like ecstasy and shit and speed and all just kind of get rolling.
So it's interesting because pretty much everybody says that we talk to, they look back on how it started and how it started to like intensify,
And they say that there was like these internal issues going on and emotional problems, and yeah, they were kind of running from it, all that sort of jazz. But they say, you know, at the time I had no idea that that's what was going on for me. I was just kind of doing what I was doing, you know, because it was kind of helping in some way. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess like that, I don't know, like, I don't know, like I think for me, like, I had I've got a good family, yeah? Like, my parents are really, really, really warm and, you know, really heartfelt, you know, in their own kind of way. And, like, I understand now that they're doing the best with what they had and, you know, supporting me throughout my addiction, you know, early on is, you know, incredible for a parent to go through that. And, like, I take my hat off to any, you know, family member that has someone, you know, in their bloodline that's kind of going through it, or like a distant relative and they're unsure of like how to kind of deal with it. And yeah, I just want to quickly say, you know, you're doing the best you can with what it is that you've got. And we're not experts in this area, and I don't think, you know, anyone kind of is when they're dealing with someone going through that. You know, but that for me, like, I wanted to push, like I had like this push pull like type like negativity like energy surrounding me as a kid, and like obviously, you know, self medicating that with drugs and alcohol would kind of, you know, suppress it. And yeah, like I never saw like my father be like, you know, emotionally intimate with my mother, and like my mother like never really you know, like she never you know, like it's yeah, like there's just like always like a sense of like rejection from her, but it come off in like a narcissistic, you know, kind of way. And again, like they're just traits of theirs. It's not who they are as people. Like they're much, much more than that. But like that's what I saw. You know, that's what I saw at an early age. I was like, geez, like our family's so dysfunctional. Like I just remember like fighting with my sister like a lot of the time, and you know, around Christmas times and stuff like that. It was just yeah, it was really hard to kind of sit with. So I don't know, like for me at school, like I think like the pivotal point for me to kind of to run away from it even further was when you know, like I started smoking cigarettes. And and then like there was one mate of mine who was really close with, and you know, I was playing basketball, and you know, he's like, you know, I don't want to be friends with a smoker. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, you know, we've been hanging out for years. And he's like, yeah, no, like I don't like people who smoke. And yeah, like that ripped me, like that sense of like rejection. I don't know, just maybe use even more, I guess. Because again, like I was running for, you know, had an inability to deal with my own emotions. You know, just wanting to continue to run. And yeah, obviously surrounded myself with a bigger crowd that was getting more involved in that stuff. And it just took a big turn from there. I was in like year 9. So it was pretty young.
How old's that? Like 15?
16? Yeah, 15, man. Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like it kind of never starts off as like, well, I'm sure for some people it does, is like full blown out of control, but it slowly just kind of slips into that. And then, yeah, the more that you like immerse yourself into the community of hanging out with different people, starts to get worse, huh?
Well, yeah, if you're in a small town like Leongatha, you know, like there's not much else. For me, like I didn't see that there was much else that I could possibly be doing, you know, like until I like moved down into Melbourne where there's, you know, greater opportunity. Obviously, like I'm clean now, and you know, on the road to recovery, you know, it's a lot different, and I want to grasp onto opportunities a bit more rather than kind of stay in a shell and remain comfortable sitting in my own, you know, in my own shit, so to speak.
So that's like a thing, right? Like, because I've spoken to, you know, obviously I never grew up in the country, and I'm pretty interested to, like, you know, hear people's perspectives on it. And I know everybody has a different experience, but that's something that a lot of people say when they're from, yeah, like remote or regional areas.
Rural areas, yeah.
Rural areas, yeah. That it's like that they just kind of feel isolated when they grow up. It, for a lot of people, doesn't feel like there's many opportunities. They're like bored. I don't know. Is that kind of what it felt like growing up for you as well?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it was really kind of it's kind of strange, like, looking back on it. You know, like, I haven't really had a lot of time to reflect prior to the podcast. But, like, I kind of, you know, for me, like, I understood, like, my childhood and what I was given as a kid was much more than somebody that was in the commission flats with Leanne Gatton, who had very little, and, you know, they might have been scrummaging for, like, you know, some money for food. And you kind of see, like, both ends of the demographic there. And, yeah. You know, like I felt privileged for where I was at as a kid. And my mother and father took me to, like, all sporting events and, you know, fed me, like, and you know, clothed me and, like, all that stuff. You know, like, I was very, very fortunate and underappreciative at the same time, you know, as a kid, because, like, I was just totally entitled. And I guess, like, I don't know, like, for me, like, sports, like, I was heavily involved with the sports and
yeah,
you know, was considerably okay at it. And then, like, I thought that's where, like, I was going to go. Like, I thought that's where, you know, my direction in life was going to take off. And, you know, like, I did, like, Alberton League in in football, and then, like, rep in basketball, and, like, junior pennant in golf. And, you know, like, I was just, like, on a trajectory to be able to, you know, have a good career. And not necessarily saying that my career now is good, but, like, it's completely different. Like, the shift is, like, vastly different to where I thought I was going to be. And,
yeah.
I don't know. So, I guess back to the question is that, like, I don't know. Like, again, like, this is like if I have an inability to deal with my own emotions and actually feel what it is that I'm going through and be supported through that, you know, I'm gonna take my will back and try my best to not feel it.
So it sounds like understanding you has been, like, a massive part of, like, and what's going on internally has been a massive part of you being able to, like, turn the ship around and change things up. Well, it's all right. Hey, this is the Real Drug Talk podcast. We just roll with whatever's happening.
Lance, are you talking about me understanding myself emotionally now that the journey with, you know, what I'm on?
Yeah, that sounds like going through that whole process has been the big thing that's helped you to turn it around, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, like, I feel as if, like, drugs and alcohol was, like, a great gateway to escapism and forming, like, you know, different, you know, different types of views and beliefs on the world, which wasn't necessarily, like, correct for me and like, what I inherited as a child. And, only now I realize that I am surrounded by people that, you know, are positive influences and decide to make, you know, a greater impact for themselves. And they also, like, bring other people up in the process of, you know, whatever it is that they do. And, they mature. Like, they mature, like, emotionally and mentally, spiritually. And that's just something that wasn't available for me taking drugs and alcohol. Like, it stunted all of that. You know, I was like, yeah, so my perception of you know, who I was warped and everybody else, you know, in the process. And
yeah.
I think now, like, you know, being able to kind of understand, like, what goes on is it's always forever changing, and you're always, like, you know, like, I guess, like, for me, like, I'm forever, Yeah, like I'm always learning more. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Like, yeah.
So if you can, just like take us back quickly. What happened? You sort of mentioned that, yeah, you're 15, you started moving into kind of more heavier drug use and different crowds, different drugs, all that sort of stuff. Like, what was the trajectory of your addiction? Like, how fast did it unravel? What happened in kind of the lowest moments? Was there anything in particular that pushed you to like go and get help? Where did you get help? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's good questions, man. yeah, like I don't know. Again, like I haven't really sat to reflect on it, and you know, I'm just kind of like off the top of the dome here. But like that 15, 16, you know, I eventually moved down to from Lancaster to Phillip Island to stay with mum and dad. And, you know, they were in the same house and then they were separated and they were in different houses. And then, you know, couldn't afford to have like two houses. So they moved back in together and then they separated again. And like that level of toxicity there just kind of like reopened a whole lot of wounds for me. And I was just like, you know what, like fucking... like it's too much. Like I just want a normal family, and I just couldn't accept the fact that, you know, our family wasn't normal. And like that's actually okay now. Like I see that as being okay. Like to not have a normal family. Like I don't think, like, you know, so I don't think society is like quite fucking normal at the moment. With everything that's kind of going on. So, you know, like but yeah, again, like I guess like it comes to, you know, accepting, you know, what is and. Like just running from that stuff all the time. Like I remember, like probably around the age of, yeah, like 18, just got my license. Didn't last too long. You know, ended up doing like this crazy like neck nomination with this guy in Cowes. And I don't know if you guys remember when the neck noms were kicking around, but
what's that again? Like sculling a beer or something?
Yeah, mate, you know what it is. You know what it is. you know. And it's like, you know, like I remember just doing a full jug of, you know, I don't know, it's probably like six carton dries or something like that, and then like half a bottle of Johnny, and then fucking, you know, sat down in my mate's house and had like, you know, like a couple of cones, and then all of a sudden, you know, I think it's a good idea to go for a drink. It's just incoherently fucked like that. And you know, I'm driving down to the beach, and all of a sudden, like I'm, you know, I get there and I was like, yeah, I'm all right, I'm not too bad. And yeah, just after leaving, I was like, man, like I'm fucking probably should not be driving, and ended up like jumping my car into, you know, into another car that hit another car, and like I left the scene as well. And then like driving back on the road, like I just like I was like swerving like in and out of the lanes, and like there was trucks that were coming out, like, you know, oncoming trucks, and you know, he would be grabbing the steering wheel, and like I'd be like, don't touch the steering wheel, like I'm trying to drive and all this sort of stuff. I'm like just completely out of control. And ended up, you know, going back to his house. I was like, look, man, like I want to leave, because, you know, your house is like red hot with cops, and like I don't want to bring any activity here to your mum's house. And yeah, I remember like ended up leaving there. I was like 18, like I just pretty much like 6 months, you know, 18 and a half or something like that, like just got my license. And you know, again, it's like meant to be like a pivotal point in one's life, is that you get your license, you stay on the straight and narrow, you advance to your green peas, and then you're onto your open license, and you know, it's free living. But for me, like I just chose I wasn't deciding to do that. Like I just didn't see myself going in any particular direction. So I was like, fucking, you know, whatever is. And and going back to the incident, like I remember just coming back home, there was smoke all pouring out of the radiator and shit, and it was almost like I was in GTA, man. It was brutal. It was just so vicious. You know, and then like, you know, the next morning, like I woke up and I went and handed myself into the police station, and you know, I was like, yeah, that was me. He was driving the car, and like, yeah, well, you know, 18 months, lost the license, and I'm still on my green peas now. I'm like 28 years old, still on my green peas. I actually got something from Vic Roads the other day saying that I need to renew my license. Like I need to pay like another $89 or something for my license. So I'm like, what do you mean? So like, you know, but like now, I don't know, like, I guess, like, it's a big difference. Like I've got to take more responsibility. And, yeah, I was at, like, 18 when I was doing stupid shit like that. And I remember, like, you know, like, oh, I would go to, like, holiday houses, like, that my mum was cleaning or whatever, you know, after hours. And, like, I would steal shit from the holiday houses and just, like, hawk, you know, and try and sell them and stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, it was, like an immoral little brat with a sense of entitlement that, you know, claimed everybody owed him something. Yeah, it turned like really vicious, and like I went psychotic after using ice. So I was using ice by the age of, yeah, like 18. And you know, they're like, oh, you know, be careful of this stuff because it'll grab a hold of you. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's all good, like, you know, I've got it. And so I'm not addicted to this stuff, like, I don't want to use it. And yeah, I think like 4 weeks after that, I was just using it constantly. And
yeah,
I was on like 14 day benders. And just like not sleeping, not wanting to sleep, and like I would see things, like I would hear things. I thought that everybody was talking about me. I don't know. Like I went right into it, and I become really gaunt. I had dreads and a beard, and like my eyes were hanging out of my head. And I was like 67 kilos at the time, and yeah, I thought it looked good, you know. But yeah, like I could still go out there and go to the pub, and you know, and yeah, again, like, you know, towards the end, like, nobody wanted to hang out with me. So it's like a, you know, it's like I pushed myself like that far away that, you know, like nobody kind of wanted to be around me. And,
yeah,
you know, just, yeah, like I wasn't making sense either. You know, like I was talking like my own language, like I wasn't making any sense.
Yeah.
You know, mum and dad didn't know how to handle me. And I was about the age of like 19, 20 or something like that. And yeah, like I stopped going to like my stepsister's wedding, you know, one of the most important, you know, moments of her life, you know. Like I didn't want to attend that. I was like, no, I'm not going. You know, just like completely shut myself off to any type of love and connection. And yeah, like I said, like I stayed inside of my dad's house and like used just like, you know. And yeah, it was like, you know, like she didn't speak to me for a long time after that. And you know, it's understandable as well, because again, like she probably, you know, was dealing with, you know, whatever she was going through, and she was going through a lot. And it's just I had no compassion to care about anybody other than myself.
Yeah,
you know, I was about 20. My only friend left was like the dealer, you know.
Yeah.
So like eventually, you know, like I ended up, you know, my old man ended up like breaking down. He was like, you know, I just don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do with you anymore. And at that point, you know, like seeing him in tears and you know, it was just like, you know, where do I go from here? And I got kicked out of home. You know, eventually, like from somebody who had everything at his disposal to not having anything, you know, all kind of it's kind of hard to say self-inflicted, but like the decisions that I made were, you know, led me to that point.
Yeah.
You know, decisions that I made led me to the point of being, you know, just somebody who was, you know, seen as like a bit of a lost cause. And yeah, it just felt like really soulless. And yeah, like seeing my old man like break down, I was like, ah, you know, I think it was like a couple of weeks after that, like I went back to try and stay at his house. And he's like, nah, like you need help. And he was like 2017 or something like that. I think is when I got introduced to the rehab. I drove the rehab like I was wearing, I don't know, like winter clothes in the summertime, you know, sweating in the car, like stinking. You know, I had like my Xbox with me as well, like, you know, I'm going to rehab. I'm thinking, well, I can go in there for a bit of a holiday. And yeah.
Like, so was it your dad sort of like breaking down that really broke through to you and helped you to make the decision to go?
Yeah, like everyone was pretty done at that point. I would have been too. It's kind of weird because he was kind of a he was never like really emotional.
Yeah.
Never emotional. Like the best guy when it comes to like support and like, you know, what do you need? Like, you know, he might be like, God, you know, but he'll like help you out, you know. But I guess like that was kind of it. And you know, sleeping under trees in the pouring rain and shit like that. Like that wasn't too fun either. It was probably really good turning point.
So you hit pretty low, and then like when you went to rehab, was there anything that shifted you or like helped? Like really kind of turn the light bulbs on and helped you to go, yeah, I've got a chance to change this stuff up?
Well, I wanted to leave. I wanted to leave like 65 days in or something like that, 70 days in, whatever it was. I don't think it was like, there was definitely like spiritual awakenings, like I guess that like you kind of call them. Inside of rehab, just kind of again, you know, like looking up and seeing what everybody else is doing, and the people that were in there were like the exact same as me, but also like pretty serious about their recovery, you know. Like we had actually really good guys in there. I think like the connection in there and everybody just trying to do the right thing by themselves, you know, like to understand that after like not taking any ownership, you know, accountability or responsibility, and then looking at like 30 other addicts like trying to do that. You know, some people just going in there willingly, you know, other people like, you know, maybe like for the drug court and stuff like that. Like unwillingly, it's, you know, I don't know, like, oh man, like I was on like a grace period, like 7 days in, and I was on like, you know, like Valiums and stuff like that. I remember we had to kind of wake up at, you know, 6:30 and go for a morning walk, and like we'd go kick the footy and stuff. So I quite enjoyed that. I don't know, like I was still psychotic, like probably about a month and a half in, you know, I was in psychosis still, like after I'd stopped using drugs, like I couldn't get out. And, you know, like I remember like going up to the, support workers in there and telling them to like check the cameras of, you know, who's been in my room and stuff, and I don't know, like I thought someone was fucking with my toilet at the time, you know, because they'd moved me from like an old room into the new room, and I was like, why are you giving me this new room? And you know, and now it stinks, and like someone's fucking with the toilet, and you know, I was like, you know, I want to check the cameras. And
it's fucking horrible. It's horrible when you're in that space as well, isn't it? I had the same experience where maybe not as long as you, but well, it was for a while actually, to be honest, but that, those like little like paranoia / psychotic, like I wouldn't have called mine psychotic, or maybe you would, I don't know, but it was all there and it was like fucked up, man. Like I just thought everybody in the rehab was like talking about me, and like, I would just sit there and like look at people having conversations with each other, and I'm like, they're fucking talking about me. And then I would like be awake. I'd be awake all night, like just tripping out about like what was happening. And it just sucks, man. It just sucks to be in that space.
It does. And look, it's so real as well. You know, that's why like and anybody now that kind of goes through the traumatic, you know, episodes or has experienced, you know, anything that is severe to them, you know, like you've really got to understand that it's real, you know, at that point in time to them. And but do your best to like kind of support them and see like a different, you know, like help them like understand something a bit different. And because what they did initially was like the program for me inside of the rehab that I went to was like, you get up, get, you know, at 6:30, and then like you should be having breakfast by like 8 o'clock after your walk. Make sure like your bed's all done, and you know, they'll come around for like room checks, and then we'll have like a morning group check-in type thing where you give some support and state how you're feeling and stuff. And we'd have like these feeling sheets, you know, it's looking through the feeling sheet. Oh, what am I feeling? You know, I'll just pick that one. You know, it's like, because you don't know, because you got no idea, you know, and then people like support you and stuff. And then like I guess after that you get a bit of downtime, and then you know you prep for your lunch, and then you got some like clean up duties like after, you know, after lunch and stuff. And but then like the one of the most important things is that they would take me to like the NA meetings and AA meetings, right? And going back to like the psychosis of it all was that like this guy was sharing like at this NA meeting, and he was in the circle, and I'm going, what the fuck? It's like this guy is sharing everything about me to the floor openly, like, you know, sharing. Like now I understand that he was just talking about himself and his own experience, but like because I was so self-centered in a state of fear, like and paranoia, it's like, man, this guy's fucking talking about me. And anyway, I go up and I approach him afterwards. And I say, man, so you know what you're doing? He's like, what? I was like, you fucking know. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, mate, you're talking about me in front of everyone. He's like, mate, what are you talking about? I was like, you know. I was like, you know what you're doing, you know? I'm like in this place of like denial and absolute like, you know, it's just self-centered fear. I think it was like after that point when I had like another mate in the rehab facility go, look, man, you know, you're sharing your story. You know, it's not about you. And then like I just stew over that. And then I think eventually that stuff started to subside, and I regained like a bit more trust in society as a whole and trust in my mateship again. And, you know, just kind of looked around me and saw that, you know, everybody was, you know, doing the best with what they, that, you know, they kind of had at the time, and they're all supportive of one another. And like that connection, you know, with a good network of people was, you know, really what helped me through.
It's interesting. I had a similar experience, like where I didn't actually like a part. Well, that's, I can't say that, but I thought it was part of my paranoia. Like she was one of the other young chicks in rehab, and when I was there, and then the rest were like older people. And I don't know. Anyway, I had this whole story going on in my head, but for some reason, like I was like talking to her one day, and like they kind of half confronted me on like, yeah, like, hey, I don't think what's going on is real and whatever. And then I had this moment where I was like comfortable, more, you know, I sort of just said to her, like, I don't know if this is real. Like, are these people saying this shit about me? And like, I started asking her, and she was just looking at me like, yeah, like I was freaking at the peanut farm, like just completely nuts. And, and then I started getting emotional because I like was realizing that she, like I was kind of maybe imagining a lot of this stuff, mm-hmm. and it wasn't real. And then I remember she said to me like, oh, like maybe you've done some like real damage. And then I said to her, like, do you reckon it'll go back to normal? I don't know why. It was just some other chick in rehab. And she's like, I don't know, hopefully, but it could be there forever. And I remember it like just scared the fuck out of me. I was like, holy shit. I couldn't, like, I might like have fucked myself up forever here. You know what I mean? It's so intense, like you said, when it's going on.
Yeah.
And that was like a bit of a
moment.
That's right. It was. I was like, wow. And that was like one of the times when I was there, and I've kind of forgotten about that. So this is why I do this, because it's good to talk to people. But I that was one of the moments where I was like, shit, I gotta take this more seriously. I gotta, you know, work on myself. So it's funny to hear that you had like the same kind of experience. And I was gonna ask you, like, one thing I've noticed with you through the time that I've known you, like you said, just kind of having a good group of mates, or like making a couple of things, just seems like it's been one of the best things for you to like continue helping you change your life. Like you got a couple of mates that you're really good mates with that you've hung around with all the time and just been a part of, like did some sport again and stuff like that. Is that been one of the biggest things for you?
Yeah. Awesome, man. Awesome. Absolutely. Absolutely. Cause like, I guess like when it would like, again, for me, like being sports oriented and quite, you know, immersed in you know, like a good, like group of people with a great culture and camaraderie, is that like all that stuff went to the wayside for me, you know, like all that stuff I thought I lost as a kid, well, I was never going to get back, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what is it? It's like reappeared again, like in my life. Like the more, for me, like there's been certain points in time where I'd wanted to isolate and be like, nah, I don't want to do that. And then doing the opposite of that, and you know, the things that I kind of learned early on is that, like, you know, my thinking is ultimately flawed in a lot of areas, and to do the opposite of what my head tells me is going to be significant to me making the right choice, you know, moving forward for my recovery. You know, I continue to do that with like sports and hanging around people, and like it's been huge. You know, it's been huge. Like the one of the guys that I live with now, like he was my second ever sponsor. Great guy who's had a lot of time for me and still continues to give me a lot of time. You know, just loved me with everything that I've done, like, you know, mistakes, you know, achievements, you know, like different types of adversity and recovery, you know, they just loved me through it, and never told me that like I shouldn't be doing anything, you know, or, you know, like kind of just give me the support around, like, you know, why do I think it's the best thing for me not to do that stuff, or like, you know, and then the other guy that I live with is, you know, we went to rehab together, and you know, he's still kicking on as well, and
yeah,
you know, like he's doing acting now, he's kicking huge goals, and there's like a 3% chance of people that are going to get clean and stay clean throughout rehab, and us two, just there's a couple of other people there as well, you know, but it's amazing, it's super important. And I think like you do build like strong friendships as well, but you can also like lose a lot of friendships in the process, and because like you can't, you know, emotionally detach from what's kind of going on with somebody else, and you want to see them succeed, and you want to see them be brought up in the, you know, in the process of recovery with you. And you know, like I knew this guy who was like a lieutenant of a like transitional facility, and like he taught me a lot about myself, and it was a great role model, and really like significant to me and my recovery, and like, you know, he's back out there using, and you know, it just happens, man, like it just happens. And I think like from that point in time, you know, and you go out there, you see people that will die as well that you're really close with, you know, and like, yeah, to like emotionally detach from that and just kind of, you know, sounds a bit selfish, but to like look after yourself, you know, is one of the most important things that you can kind of do. And
it's interesting. I was going to ask you a couple of things, like, because from what you're saying, you sound like someone, and tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but yeah, you sound like someone that maybe, and I'm the same, like, you know, like understanding what's going on for yourself internally, and, you know, having emotional intelligence about yourself, and processing, you know, everything that's going on inside doesn't come naturally, but it sounds like learning that and learning how to kind of express and understand everything amongst everything else that's going on has just been like a massive part of your journey to change it. And you mentioned like a sponsor, and I just want to quickly ask you a bit about that for people listening, because we're all about just like putting out all the options there, all the different ways that people find change, so that, you know, people can go and investigate for themselves. So it sounds like going to 12-step fellowships and stuff like that has been a big part of your journey to like turning it around. Yeah. And what's a, like, how would you explain like a sponsor, like a mentor, right?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, 100%. Yeah. And like you kind of know that, like, whatever you go through in recovery, like emotionally, like it's going to be a roller coaster. Yeah. You know, you can have your highs and your lows, and you yourself would have faced, like, you know, great adversity in your own recovery, and you know, persevered through it, and not only done it, you know, for yourself, but like you wouldn't have done it by yourself either, you know. And I think that's where a sponsor kind of comes in, is that that to understand, like, you know, how to regulate your emotions on a day-to-day basis is going to be pivotal to you not only remaining clean, but being able to face those challenges head on without running and becoming introverted. And
I don't know about you, which I think is an interesting point, because I was talking to someone else about it the other day. One of the things that I've, that like a sponsor, mentor, coach, whatever format has been really helpful for me in, is one of the things I, and I don't know if you're the same, one of the things I've found hard about recovery is like when I make mistakes, you know, like in recovery. And you know, because it's one thing, don't get me wrong, it's fucking hard when you come out of like addiction and you've done all this shit and you're like, fuck, I've got to. But there is that element where in your own mind, when you get to a certain point, you learn that, like, well, that was part of my addiction and I have to accept it, take responsibility and, you know, make amends and change my behavior and do all that stuff. But you understand that it's probably happened because of like your drug and alcohol use, or that's a big part of the reason. But when you do mistakes like in recovery, it's like super hard to like live with yourself sometimes, you know, or that's what I've found anyway. And that's what I have found, like just having, like you said, mates and people that mentors and whatever to help me with that kind of stuff. Have you been the same?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I don't just want to continue making mistakes and going, you know, like, ah, oh, fuck, like, you know, it's all right. Like, I'll just, you know, I'll make a mistake, like, I'll learn from it and be, like, kind of naive to the mistake that I've made. Like, if I'm going to make a mistake, you know, like, I'll allow myself to sit in, you know, to sit in the repercussions, like, emotionally. You know, I think that's, like, really healthy for me, is that, you know, there's a lot of like self-love and like affirmation that can come from working the 12 steps of you know, NAAA, doesn't really, you know, whatever's suitable to you. You know, you don't just like recover or become recovered from doing it. It's like a process. But yeah, like, I guess, like, you know, number one is that, you know, you kind of, for me, like, I was powerless over like my addiction. Like, you know, everything that I kind of did, like, was, you know, there was no like sense of consequential thinking. Like, I just did it, you know, like I didn't have like that first, and I didn't have that like a second thought and taking the action from there, you know. So like, you know, if I made a mistake, like it's important for me, like, even if I make a mistake now in recovery, and it's going to happen from time to time, it's like I don't tell myself like that I'm a piece of shit and like I deserve to die and like nobody's gonna love you because you continue to fuck up in all areas of your life. You know what I mean? Like, that's self-hatred. And for me, that self-hatred is no longer serving me as a person. And don't get me wrong, like, it's easy to slip back into that, especially when I'm in like a lower sense of self. And I haven't applied, you know, myself to the program as much as what I could be. But like, when I'm on the other end of that and like I'm in conscious contact with something greater than myself, and I feel like, you know, really fulfilled in a lot of areas of you know, of my life, you know, it's really easy to guide myself through that and just go, you know what, like, this is a byproduct of you know, the disease. For me, like, I've got a disease, like, I'm not, you know, call it whatever you want to call it, but, you know, for me, like, the disease of addiction. And yeah, like, I'm not going to be ignorant to kind of what's going on there. Like, you know, like, I'm really self-aware about, you know, this is the type of behavior that I've applied in addiction. And, you know, is it going to serve me moving forward? Like, you know, do I need to get honest with another member or in my family or like a close friend or, you know, do I need to make an amends to the car, the windscreen, you know, or the car mirror that I've hit going down the road? Do I need to leave a note there and go, hey, look, you know, like I've hit the car, here's my number. You know, I'm happy to pay. It's like that kind of stuff is super important for me to be able to minimize the shame and guilt and feel that self-hatred again, because it's just something that I just don't want to move back to. You know, it's kind of weird, like for me, like not wanting to take responsibility and owning anything into like making sure that like I can do, you know, what's necessary.
Hyper responsibility.
Yeah, like you know, I'm still young, still got like a lot to learn, but yeah, like I just know it's on the other end, and then like I could just like imagine, like, you know, my mom and dad, like, I could take responsibility for your life, you know, like fucking, you're not a child anymore and stuff like that, you know.
Mate, it's awesome. And again, like, thanks for coming on and sharing your story. The last question I wanted to ask you is, this whole experience that you've had in your life with like addiction and hitting some of those like real low points and all that sort of stuff is, like, has it changed like the course of what you want to do with your life in terms of, I don't know, your career or just like hobbies or you found that you're still interested in the same stuff, like, you know, trades and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I want to say that I've revolutionized my existence as a human being, and like I actually believe that as well. It's not like I just want to say, but I believe it to be true. You know, and it's not just to give hope and to anyone else out there who might be going through.
You have. So you can say that.
But it's not like a shout out for hope or anything. It's like it's actually the case. You know, and I guess like what the beautiful thing about recovery is that like it's providing me with enough tools to be able to use in my everyday, you know, life to have me advance forward in the right direction with like career and opportunities. You know, I remember like I dropped out of year 10, right? Like I didn't want to study, didn't want to go back to school, and then all of a sudden, like I'm in recovery, and you know I'm back studying, you know, and I just study at AFA in Caulfield, and you know, like I take my hat off to the teachers in there, and I think they're just amazing staff, and anyway, I finished my course, like I sat up the front, you know, like I took in everything that the teacher was saying, is because like I know myself, like if I stay at the back, like I'm not going to apply any of this stuff in my career, and so I chose, like, again, like I'm doing the opposite of what it is that my thinking's telling me. And I'm reaping the rewards. And like, if I fail like an assignment or whatever, like I'll be like, oh, I could just stay back and do it. Like, I don't want to do that. It's like, but you are, you're here, you've got to do it. You've got to sit it. And, you know, I remember I'd stay back there until like 7:30, like this, you know, couple of nights and try and get it done. And, you know, like I did it. Sure enough, I kind of, you know, had a job opportunity come up at like Fitness First in Pan Highway, and you know, I was like, oh, I think, you know, it's going to be a bit much for me to kind of make the rent, and you know, like the instability there was pretty crippling, and you know, like I was in a lot of fear around it. And then I went to Vision up the road, and like I walked in there, and like Vision, it's like it's amazing, like culture, like it's really cool. It's like everyone kind of knows your name and stuff. So you walk up the stairs, like, yeah, Jack, and you're like, yeah, you know, like all the trainers say, hey, Jacob, you know, it's like it's cool. It's really cool. And I remember the first time I went up there, doing like this group class, and you know, it's like I don't know, like if you kind of in recovery or you're just, you know, getting clean for the first time, or whatever, and you're experiencing like, yeah, an overwhelming sense of like, you know, anxiety, you probably understand like how crippling it is to put yourself out even further. And I don't know, for me, like I walked up the stairs for the first time, I seen all these guys running a group class, doing like a group class of like 40 to 50 people, whatever. And I was like, nah, I'm not doing that. I'm not going in there to get a job. There's no way. And I walked back out, and I was like, man, if you walk out of here now, you're going to lose one of the greatest opportunities that could potentially happen to you. And, And I was like, I'll go in there tomorrow. And like, I went in there the next day, applied for a job role. And then like, eventually got the job. So for me, like health and fitness was obviously like a big part of me to be able to, you know, to stay on the right path in recovery. And I don't know, man, like I just want to finish on this stuff. But my experience in that place was monumental to me. Like that, the life skill that I acquired from being a PT, like, because there was a lot of personal development stuff behind that, and that coincided with my recovery. Like I kind of matured and grew in like a different way. You know, and like I was around people who were also like other greater inspirations to me, and you know, had achieved things, you know, academically and financially and all the careers and stuff like that. This was in Brighton, and you know, it just kind of propelled me even further. And like my mentor, you know, I was probably like a year or so in, you know, I'd done like a fitness competition. I'd like ran like, you know, I got like a first, second, third in this fitness competition that I did. Like I ran like, you know, two or three marathons with clients of mine. And, you know, I just continued to throw myself out there. And my mentor at the time was like, you know, you're going to get this, you're going to go to Tony Robbins. I was like, oh, I don't go to Tony Robbins. He's like, man, you're going to go to Tony Robbins. I was like, go on, Tony Robbins. He's like, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. I was like, oh, why do I got to do it? He's like, because it'll change your life. It'll change the way you see everything. And again, like taking a leap of faith. And I was like, yeah, how am I going to get the money to do it? And he's like, well, go see your mom, go see your dad, you know. And I was like, I'm going to them for cash. And, you know, I was too prideful at the time as well. And, you know, I had to reduce the level of pride and be like, you know, like I want to go to Tony Robbins. And they're like, you know, we can't afford to send you there. And I was like, it's like probably $3,000 in total or something like that, including the tickets, the airfares and the B&Bs and whatever. And so anyway, like they couldn't afford it, couldn't give me the money, and all of a sudden, like I found myself doing things that were totally the opposite of what my thinking was telling me, you know, to kind of remain comfortable in the studio, don't go out too far, just do your PT, go home, you know, have a sleep and, you know, come back. But yeah, I mean, I'm just like putting in the hours, you know, of going down to like the train station in Brighton, and I learned how to like sell, you know, as a PT and market myself as a PT. And one of the coolest things ever when you like get the gist of, you know, when you learn a skill and then you apply it and you keep applying and applying it. And, you know, the fear of rejection was so real, but at the same time, it's like, go for no, just go for no. Like I had that support. It's like, it's all right to get rejected. Just keep going for no, just keep going. And I was like, all right, like I'm a fucking persistent fucker. Like I'm going to do it, you know? And, and I'm down at the train station of Brighton, and like I'm talking to all these people. I'm like, hey, are you interested in any personal training? And they're like, no, you know. And like you get a couple of people, and it's like, oh yeah, so what's your number? 04, you know. And then like, you know, they're like, you give you the number and stuff. And all of a sudden, like I'm selling myself as a PT, and like I call them up the next day, or you know, whenever's a suitable time for them. I'm in the AM or the PM, like that sort of salesy stuff, you know. And like I'm calling them, and I've got like probably about 10, 15 different leads, and all of a sudden, like, you know, like I'm getting them inside of the studio, right, and running them through like a like an initial consultation, and getting them on like, you know, 2 sessions a week or whatever, which is, you know, going to get them the result if they remain consistent. And it's also going to help me financially too to achieve my goals. And And like, yeah, like I just continue to do that. And then like I'm upselling sessions in the studio to like different like people. And, you know, it's like, hey, let me do this and rah, rah. And like everybody was just like loving it. And, you know, I continue to put myself out there. And all of a sudden, right, I've got all this money now. Like I've got all this money to go to Tony Robbins. And I'm fucking booking in. I'm going straight to Tony Robbins. I'm going up to Sydney. So I was in like Kudos Bank Arena in Sydney. And I had no idea where I'm going, man. Like the first time I came to Melbourne after rehab, like the sense of direction, like I was calling my mum from South Gippy. And like I was like, mum, like, where am I going? Where am I catching the tram to? And stuff like that, you know, like had no idea. And that sense of direction, you know, it's always kind of crippled me. And all of a sudden I'm in like Sydney by myself, and like the anxiety and fear there is like, holy shit, like where the fuck am I going? Like, I'm going to be late. Like I don't want to be late to this scene, Tony Robbins or whatever. And yeah, man. And like I don't know, like I just continue to have like reimbursed faith that like everything was going to be okay. Just, you know, just continue to do the next right thing and just manage your time, you know, like participate, like remain engaged and get uncomfortable and just get like super uncomfortable and dumb. And this Tony Robbins was like a freaking spiritual rock concert, man. Like it was it was crazy, absolutely crazy. So we were there for like 5 days and we ended up so what he does is like fully G's you up, like he puts you in like a peak state is what he calls it, and he's like does like all these affirmations. He's like for those who don't know, Tony Robbins is like he's a giant, and he's that guy who's like, does anybody want to make six figures? Say I. And then I was like, I. He's like, does anybody want to walk on fire? He's like, I. And anyway, all of a sudden, we're in like, we're G'ing ourselves up, and they're like 12-hour days, man. They're like big days, big days. And he's like, all right, we're going to go walk on fire. I was like, what? We're walking on fire. Look at the person next to me. And they're like, yeah, we're walking on fire. I'm like, holy shit. He's like, yeah, we've got all these, you know, we've got all these pits burning down the back there. And anyway, we get out there. And as we're walking through the, as we're walking through the Kudos Bank Arena, there's like a huge line of people. It's pretty like, you know, like 5,000, maybe 4,000 people or something like that, like in the arena. And everyone's just like walking out, it's got like pitch black, and everyone's like, yes, 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 yes. And all you hear is like the marching of the people, they're like, yes, yes, yes. It's like you get out there and you know, and all of a sudden, like you have to fight a pit, and you're like, I'm gonna fucking step on this shit, it's gonna burn my feet, man. Like, is it gonna burn my feet, you know? And like that, I don't know like what it is, but like being in that peak state and kind of and knocking out like that element of self-doubt and reducing the level of fear and being like convicted with, you know, doing a set task, man, like you walk across this fire and then it's like you're like, ah, you walk across the fire and you just like hug the person that's like at the end of the fire, and you're both just like, yeah, and like and they're like, you know, stomp your feet, and there's these ladies at the end and they've got like the hose and shit, and like, you know, you gotta wipe your feet, and yeah, it was like crazy. I was like, holy shit, like I've just walked across fire, and you know, and then like obviously coming back from that, I don't think the firewalk was like the most revolutionary thing that's ever kind of like happened in my life, but like it was definitely like a like a truer sense, like a truer sense of myself, like definitely come out, and like an element of you know, being prideful and confident was now like a bit more awoken within me, and I don't know, like I was buzzing for like 6-7 months after that, you know? Yeah. Like I was fully buzzing and
I love the story. I really do, because I think you kind of like summed up perfectly like the buttery essence of almost like what recovery is, which is, and you said it when you were talking about doing all this stuff to go, but basically like that, yeah, that sense of like I'm not going to be okay goes away, and then you just have like a sense of everything's going to be all right, you know? And for those people listening, like anyone that's been in addiction will kind of get that, or has battled with it, you know, that it's so hard to explain and articulate, but yeah, you just have this like weird feeling of like dread all the time, or like that nothing's going to go right, or that you're not okay. It's weird. And then when that starts to shift, it's fucking cool, isn't it? Like your world kind of opens up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's cause you're doing, it's I don't know, like you're kind of doing things that you thought you wouldn't ever see yourself do.
Yeah, that's right.
Only because you're putting yourself in that uncomfortable situation and you're saying yes, you know, after, you know, the response, fuck no, I don't want to do that. I can't do that. It's way too hard. It's like, you can't do it. You just need the right support. You need someone to believe in you for doing it. And you've got to be like really uncomfortable and taking that next step to doing it.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Mate, I love it. I apologize because I want to keep talking to you, but I got to bounce. But that was awesome. I loved it. So thanks heaps for coming on and telling your story. And, mate, I look forward to seeing all the cool stuff that you're going to do moving forward.
Yeah. Hey, so yeah, I appreciate
so,
it.
So if people want a PT session, where do they find you? Just while we're on track?
Yeah, just hit me up on the Insta. Instagram J Smoothies. I'm more in the community sector environment nowadays. So yeah. But hey. thanks heaps for having me, Lance. Really appreciate it, man. And thanks to everyone that's tuned in as well. Hope you got something out of it.
Awesome, man. Have a good day. Peace.
You too. See you, Lance.
All right, beautiful people. That was another episode of Real Drug Talk. Hope you got something out of that episode. Like he said at the end, love talking to Jacob. He's a really down-to-earth guy. And seeing his transformation over the last few years has been awesome. So, again, hope it helped and you got something out of it. And just remember, sounds super corny, I know, but if you're stuck in that place and you feel like you're struggling, you can do it too, right? It's the whole reason why we do the show. It's what helped me turn it around was that when I heard someone else tell their story, it just sparked something in me and I thought I can do it too. So we hope that this show does that for you in some way. If you're looking for help, again, we run a treatment program called Connection Based Living. Details in the description. And please, if you like what we're putting out, subscribe and leave a review. It really helps us progress through the ranks and reach more people and hopefully give them some hope too. Have a great week, guys. Look forward to vibing in your ears again soon. Peace. We'll be right back.